Greetings, this is Steph Kosarasevic, and the course is Principle of Searching, and the first lecture will provide an overview about searching and a bit of history. In every lecture, I'll provide a central idea about the lecture, and in this lecture, the central idea is that the searching is a very complex interactive process aimed at finding and retrieving relevant information. This, of course, when we say that way, it raises a number of questions. What is information? What is relevant? What is finding? What is retrieving? What is interaction? And we will clarify some of these ideas. In addition, we will clarify ideas that the modern searching has deep roots in historical attempts to deal with the information explosion. So here's the table of contents. We have all together 48 slides. Of these 48, 9 are title slides, so we have 39 content slides, 5 slides about basic definitions, 4 slides about the complexity and elements involved, and 8 slides about searching and search interactions, 7 slides about professional changes in searching, 13 about a bit of history, and 2 about the conclusion. So let's get going on the first part, and just to point out, I have a nice cup of green tea with honey, and I'll be sipping the green tea once in a while. So in the first part, we'll talk about the basics, a few definitions, and you all know these definitions, but we should sometimes think about it. So let's start with the notion of information. And we'll talk about it in two ways, one about the general way and the other one about the context of searching. As we all know, information has great many meanings, and it very much depends on context. Somebody did an overview the number of definitions of information and came up with something like 70 or so, and every one of them depends on the context. However, nobody needs to have this defined. It's a primitive concept. It's universally well understood. We don't have to explain to anybody in the world what does it mean, and many other definitions are built upon it. If you click on these definitions on the web, you will find more definitions. Unfortunately, when I do PowerPoint recording, when I do Camtasia recordings, then these hyperlinks don't work. Anyhow, information comes from Latin, like so many other things, and it basically means to fashion, to shape, to create, to give form to. And when you think about it, this is what we are trying to do. But in the context of searching, we will talk about information in terms of several layers, of several strata, from narrow to broadest. On a narrow level, or narrow strata, we talk about information as a property of the message, of the text, of a record, of the record, of a document, of an image. We'll come to that a little bit later. And the broader, we talk about involving us, and this is the property of cognition. And the information does affect and changes the state of a mind. But the state of the mind doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists with an expansive social context. So on the broadest level, we are talking about information in terms of also the context, such as horizon, culture, work, task, problem at hand. So when we are doing searching, we must consider information not only as a message, not only as a text or a document, but we must consider it how it affects cognition and within what social context and contextual sets. Here are a few quotes, information is a different that makes a difference. I kind of like that quote. You have to kind of mull over it. And of course, T.S. Eliot had the famous one, where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where is the knowledge we have lost in wisdom? A guy who is a computer guy says, with so much information now online, it is exceptionally easy to simply dive in and drown. And boy, I think I do that daily when I go on the web. Somebody said this, and I like this. The Stone Age was marked by man's clever use of crude tools. The Information Age, to date, has been marked by man's crude use of clever tools. And boy, this is certainly true when we started using all kinds of search engines for searching. One of the things that we mentioned is that searching is a complex interactive process that is aimed at finding and retrieving relevant information. So what do we mean by relevant? Webster defines relevant as having significant and demonstrable bearing on the matter of hand. And I think this is true to consider it all the time, because in searching as well, because it involves context. Relevance is the ability, as of an information retrieval system, to retrieve material that satisfies the needs of the user. And here it raises the issue of need, and we'll be talking a lot about it. Well, relevance has many, many synonyms. So people are talking about pertinent information, useful information of utility, germane information, material information, and so on. By any other word, relevance remains relevance. But in the context of searching, we are talking about several layers of strata, as I already introduced to you in the previous slide. Information is connected. Relevant is that information which is connected with the users, searchers, inquirers, information need, and that's a very important and, the cognitive state of that user, as related to a given task or problem at hand, and as related to the given affective state, to the motivation, intention, and so on. As you well know, relevance doesn't stay by itself. It always has a connection to, so it always has a context. We also talk about relevance being that in searching is aimed at finding and retrieving relevant information. Well, what do we mean by finding? Generally, finding relates to realizing, understand, or locate something, especially by studying or observing, to make an effort to gather something and to discover something or somebody after a search. But in the context of searching, a guy named Morvill, and we can access his book online, he defined findability as the quality of being locatable or navigable, and is the degree to which particular object is easy to discover or locate, the degree to which a system supports navigation and retrieval. It's an old adage that librarians and searchers are concerned with searching and the users are concerned with finding. So we have to consider finding as well. The last component that we'll be defining here is information retrieval, because all our searching today is done in one way or another through information retrieval. Here's a book that you can gather, although it's a relatively new or brand new book, but you can get copies, HTML, PDF copies of various chapters. And they define the book as the information retrieval as finding materials. Again, the notion of finding comes up, usually documents, which is true, but there could be other stuff as well. Such as pictures or sounds, of an unstructured, usually text that unstructured nature, usually text that satisfied an information need from within large collections, usually stored on computers. We have other definitions about information retrieval of the web, but this kind of captures it. In the context of searching, and much more specific, we are talking information retrieval, meaning a searching of and retrieval from various sources, such as abstracting and indexing databases and services, all kinds of specialized sites, search engines, directories, portals, digital libraries, online public access libraries, references, resources, and the like. All of these in today's contemporary context can be labeled as information retrieval systems, and that is what they actually do. Okay, let's go to the second part, and we will talk about complexity, about the elements involved in searching. As you have seen already on our site, The course has a logo. I kind of made it up. I didn't make the notions, but I made these wheels, and I had fun making it. The searching involves is a complex process that involves interaction and feedback between and among people, information, and technology. And let's now take it apart, people and information and technology, and deal with each of them. What do we mean? Us to people, on the user side, we generally mean people who access and use an information system, an information retrieval. And this is very important to notice that we talk about people with an information need that may be satisfied by a search of a system. More and more people are doing their own searching, so the term is also end users, people who use an information retrieval system directly to retrieve information. People you are also involved, and professional searchers, you, are experts with knowledge and competencies for performing effective and efficient searches in a variety of sources, systems, and media. And in the next few lectures, we'll be talking about what do we mean by effective searches. Searches, the professional searchers do searches that may be done on behalf of people or institution or task, and these we call mediated searching. Searches must follow also ethical guidelines, and we will be referring to these guidelines quite often, especially toward the end of the course, which will summarize what we mean by it. The next component in those three is information. Well, what do we mean? We are very closely connected with two aspects of information when we talk searching. One is content, and the other one is the way that content is organized. Well, here when we are talking about a context, we are talking about objects. Objects could be documents, it could be pictures, it could be audio, it could be video, multimedia, whatever, that have a potential to convey information. And very often we'll simply refer to them as records or objects of information. So far in our searching, most are text and documents. And even when we have images and recordings, they're mostly labeled with text. So they're again sort of documents. And a great many systems collect them by sources, such as in journals where they appear, or in areas such as in chemistry and so forth. Well, once this content, the objects, are gathered, they have to be organized. So we are very much concerned in searching the ways and means by which the objects are organized to facilitate, to access searching. You can't get to search if something is not organized. And organization means vocabularies, free and controlled, indexes, fields, abstracts, and so forth. And great many today are created automatically. For instance, term extracted from text. We will be going through these aspects, particularly vocabularies, in the third lecture. There are many, many types of organization exist, and as more and more algorithms are appearing for organizing information automatically, more are on the horizon. Well, organization is essential for searching. Content that is not organized cannot be searched. Let's go to the third part of this, and this is technology. And we are talking again in terms of several layers, and two very important divisions is that on the one hand we talk about hardware and software, and on the other hand the systems that are built on the basis of this hardware and software. We mean hardware and software, a variety of information and communication technology, and most importantly includes networks, and we cannot even envision any more searching without networks. And great many software applications, and most are taken as given by users and searchers. On the system side, we are talking about systems that handle information or information objects by collecting them, organizing them, storing, managing, providing access, and they provide capabilities to search, retrieve, navigate, and browse. We will label all these systems as information retrieval systems. Well, the two are quite different things, hardware and software and systems, but they're closely connected. Professional searchers, you, need to know how to use both. In this course, we will deal only with systems. On the right-hand side, there are other courses that deal with technology. So let's go now to the third part of the lecture, and we are talking about interactions, the kind of interactions, the components, and dynamics. Well, when we talk about interaction with information, there is no such thing as not to interact. Yes, there is a double negative, but it's also, when you think about it, there's two. Information in front of you, there is no way you can not interact. Even if you don't know what information is all about, you interact then. In general, when we talk about interactions, we concentrate on behavior of people in the use of information, which is embedded in systems, services, networks, and devices. We are very much now oriented toward information that comes out of systems or networks. And more recently, this also includes, this interaction includes cooperative activities among dispersed people and resources. A sip of tea. And this is where we are going to talk quite a bit in the course, toward the end of the course, that searching has become now also a cooperative activities between searchers and their users. On the various interactions that we are interested in, we are talking about three kinds, three different ones: human information interaction, human-human information interaction, or user-searcher interaction, and human-computer interaction. So let us talk first about human information interaction. In general, information interaction is the process that people, all the people, use to communicate and act reciprocally with an information system, information objects, particularly in relation to its context. It's a dynamic process, mostly mediated by technology. It involves feedback, and we'll be talking about feedback quite a bit, reiteration, reciprocal action, evaluation, and so on. In the context of searching the human information interaction, we are talking about how and why people access information, and how this is highly dependent on the context of their interaction. This context is influenced by a large number of factors, such as the time, place, and history of interactions that preceded that, the task, why are you using the interaction, and the technical possibilities of the information systems. I took that from a conference, Information Interaction in Context, that was held in 2008. Well, here a graphic description of what is involved in human information interaction. It is a iterative process within a context. There is a problem, task at hand that you, I have, that produces an information need, that generates a question, that generates a query. From the query, we do a search, we get some response. Then we might see how that affects the problem and tasks, and we might go reiteratively. What this circle doesn't have, an obvious thing that there must be an end someplace, and there is the end someplace, whether the response satisfied, not, or we move on with something else. The next slide will define these components, and we will discuss them, some of them throughout the course. When you talk about a problem and task, we have a job to do. We have a situation. I have to teach a course. You have to learn something in the course. I have certain demographic and other characteristics, such as my characteristics would be that I know something about searching. And affective state is that I'm in a hurry to do the redesign this course. So this is all in the context of me teaching. For this, I have an information need. An information need is somewhat a subjective and even nebulous concept. Mostly, information need refers to cognitive state, to gaps in knowledge. Brenda Derwin, researchers in this area, was talking about and became famous in relation to the gaps in knowledge. Or an anomalous state of knowledge, our own Nick Belkin was writing about it, that the need arises because we have a gap in knowledge or we have an anomalous state of knowledge. The need is goal-oriented. There is always associated certain uncertainty, otherwise we wouldn't have it, a need, and a necessity to fill it. Well, the question is a representation, could be a verbal, could be written or oral, of the information need and a problem at hand. So the need is in our head and our context, and the question is in our mouth. The query is, once we take the question and we translate it into a search statement, as is allowed by a given system, and we can vary these queries. The search is the process of submitting the query and conducting the search as prescribed by your system. Google tells you to search differently than Dialog, than Scopus, and so forth. The system provides some responses, and these could be rearranged, reformatted. You can evaluate them and submit some, reject others. Send it back to the problem and task, and this may then go reiteratively. We might have a different information need on the basis of what we got, and different question or query we will change, and so forth. Again, there is an end someplace. Well, what's the role of you? It's not only to do the searching, the mechanics of the searching, but to do and help users in quite a few other tasks. In addition, you might assist, lead, or instruct the user how to define or specify the problem at task or task at hand, almost like a diagnosis of the information need. And you might guide the user when they cannot express something fully to express it, so it would be searchable. You may help the user to formulate the question in clarifying and defining the concepts, and you will certainly do the translating of the question, the queries, and choosing various responses. You'll be evaluating the responses, choosing various variations of the queries. You'll be evaluating the responses, eliciting feedback to steer iteration, guide toward further action, resources of their own. So what I'm saying is that there is much, much more to searching than searching itself. Now, the next that we are dealing with is the, after we talked about human information interaction, is human information interaction. What is happening is that you are communicating with the users. It's generally means that this communication between two or more people with a goal of obtaining or exchanging information. It's a reciprocal action. It is goal-directed. Most people get the information from other people. So what we are trying to do is a system to get information also from object as well. Well, when we consider human information interaction in the context of searching, we are talking about user and searcher interaction between you as a user. And part of that, it is part of mediated searching. We are calling this mediated searching, and we'll be referring to that as mediated searching in the rest of the course. What that means, mediated searching, is that searchers are acting on behalf of other people or institutions. So somebody calls you to ask you for a search, that, and you do the search, we meant that mediated searching. But mediated searching involves more than just searching. It also involves user modeling, which means that you're trying to determine what are the information needs, what are the requirements, what are their characteristics of these requirements as related to how you can do more effective searches. So the user modeling is a quite complex process that is aimed at doing more effective searching, so learning about the user as much as you possibly can. The user modeling predates for probably about a century by a reference interview. For a long, long time, for over a century, librarians were very much concerned how to do the reference interview. And they did the same thing. Today we call it user modeling. Before that, they had all kinds of names, which was the output of the reference interview. The human-computer interaction, on the general level, the human-computer interaction is the study and practice of interaction between people and computers. It's a study of relationship between humans and computers. And the special interest group on computer-human interaction from the Association of Computing Machinery talks about that human-computer interaction is concerned with the design, evaluation, and implementation of interactive computing system for human use and with the study of major phenomena surrounding them. In the context of searching, what we mean by human-computer interaction is very much what involves you when you sit at the computer. And we also mean the study and practice of using computers, particularly interfaces in searching for retrieval, so searching for and retrieval of information. Very often this is a concentration on using a particular information system such as dialogue or interfaces or algorithms. It is also involving evaluation of the effectiveness and efficiency of interactions, how well one is doing, and how well are the algorithms and systems and the interfaces doing. Here is a picture from an article by a group of people that appeared in the Journal of the American Society for Information Science a few years ago. Their information basically says the same thing, information-seeking task that then produce interaction with the system, that produce initial query formulation. You search that, there's a system feedback, one evaluates the outcomes of the search and then makes a decision either to reformulate a query, begin the search, and here terminate the session, or then go back to the information seeking task and so forth. It's a nice illustration of how this iterative search process, interactive search process, works. Let's go to the fourth aspect of professional changes in searching, and we will be examining here some dramatic shifts that are occurring within the last half a dozen years or so, and that even more are showing that even more are on the horizons. First, let's talk about mediated searching. As I mentioned, mediated searching is of interest to librarianship for over a century. And reference became a major component of both library study and library practice. And reference have been practiced in libraries all over the world. But something happened to the reference. We'll shortly talk about that. With advent of information and communication technology, mediated online searching became a major professional and research activity. Even mainstream, or what many information centers and special libraries are doing. There are a great many publications, there are conferences about this online searching, and the whole information industry is oriented to it. Searching, and by searching we mean mediated searching became a big deal. Well, we are teaching it now for decades, and we are teaching it still today. I mentioned the information industry. Information industry evolved from online searching. Starting from early 1960, it developed dealing with computerized, first abstracting and indexing services, and then a variety of databases that are available for searching. Earliest of these databases available for searching were government-sponsored, for instance, Medline. Then many of them were transformed within professional organizations. For instance, chemical abstracts went from a printed edition to online edition. That private industry appeared, such as Dialog. By 1970s, information industry became global, and point to be made here is that most of the databases and services from information industry were oriented towards professional searches, toward you. And the professional searches then offered searching to users in their institutions, in their companies, in their public libraries. And that's how the contemporary mediated searching evolved. But there was many changes that have occurred, and one of the important change and far-reaching change is due to search engines. Search engines, and we'll get a little bit later to that, have radically changed the way people search for information. Suddenly what happened is that mediated searching, including reference search questions, have declined drastically over the last decade, losing jobs. Users become end users. They are searching for themselves. And end user searching of search engines exploded all over the world. Well, here is one of the statistics from the Association of Research Libraries. Association of Research Libraries has about 100 and a few more of the largest research academic university libraries in North America, United States, and Canada. And between 1995 and 2006, reference transaction declined 54%. And they're declining even more. And mediated searching followed. It's done much less than a decade ago. Rutgers had a few searches, and today I don't think that anybody does online searching on behalf of users, possibly a few for some projects, but it is not generally what they do. So we have general changes that happen in library use. The biggest change, particularly as searching is concerned, is that libraries have added a great many digital resources, including databases and resources for end-user searching, not only for professionals, but for end-users. As a result, there is a dramatic change in the use of libraries by users. The virtual use, that means use that is not walking into the library, is skyrocketing, while the physical use is plummeting. And here is a quote. Users don't vote anymore with their feet, but with their fingers. It's interesting, for instance, that I, and probably you now too, is a regular user of the Rutgers libraries. I probably use them particularly during the semester every day and several times a day. I haven't been in the library for God knows how long. I can't even remember when I was the last time there. So these electronic transactions are growing rapidly. Physically, users are not in the library, but the library use is going up and up and up and up. The use of printed resources and the brick-and-mortar library is going down. The use of digital resources is really skyrocketing. We don't have statistics how many searches are done on databases available in libraries, for instance, at Rutgers, but there must be a lot. Well, here are some quotes. Many years ago, the esteemed Barbara Quinn, that's not Quint, it's Quinn, and she is the editor of The Searcher and writes really biting editorials. They're a delight to read. And if you ever have a chance to go to listen to Barbara at some conference, by all means go. And she offered an estimate that Google answered as many reference queries in half an hour as all reference librarians in the world did in 7 years. I don't think that Barbara had the statistics at her hand, but I think she's generally right. A recent article talked about the users and digital libraries, and while the users may be absent from the libraries, they're not inactive. Network electronic resources via library portals and the internet have provided users with benefits that go far beyond anything available when physical use was the only alternatives. And it is this different kind of use of libraries that also is driving different kind of activities that searchers are involved in. Well, web has changed a lot of stuff. It has changed the way we live, the way we play, the way we learn, the way we do our work. So it has changed the information industry and the database in a big, big way. The old databases, for instance, the databases that have been about citation indexes, originally in print indexes, have restructured significantly. Today, this is Web of Science. They have new databases and vendors that emerged and that we'll be also dealing with in this course, Scopus, that emerged about 4 or 5 years ago and became the leading, one of the leading databases and vendors in the world. EBSCO and Wilson, who had very much they have a history of involvement with print going 100 years or so, reinvented themselves and became aggregators, where publisher of these publishers of journals became databases for searching. And all of them went with great gusto after end users. Well, after all, it's a much bigger portion of the pie, and it's a very, very different market. Nowadays, libraries don't buy any books or any indexes. They buy time-based licenses from databases for access to their users. For instance, and we'll be talking about it later, is Rutgers University libraries provide access to close to 300 databases in every field conceivable. Well, what are the changes for searches for you? Searchers are not involved anymore just in searching. They're involved. I see what Myung Wilson is doing, who was a premier searcher at Rutgers University Libraries. They're involved with licenses, with library web systems, with library web system access, with the provision. Plus, they have a number of new orientations and services that have emerged and are still being developed and refined. So here is a group of them, is that searchers are becoming also what is known as knowledge involved in knowledge navigation. They support the user in a variety of ways in locating and retrieving relevant information in the global information environment, not only in the institutional environment, but the global one. Searchers are more and more involved in cooperative searching with users and projects. And that cooperative searching may be long distance. You may be in one place and the user may be God knows where. And we will, in our term project, we'll try to simulate a cooperative searching. Searchers are involved also in source recommendation, and we are going to simulate that too in our term project. In source evaluation, becoming a great, great important thing for searchers and for the users. In impact investigation, this is a relatively new area, and we'll be exploring it in one of the units and a few few exercises. And this is searching now for evidence, for data that could be used in assessing outputs such as impact of research of institutions or researchers. And searches are also used in user assistance and training, including, particularly including information literacy. But no matter what other services you're going to get involved, you still have to master searching. Well, let's go now to history. And we'll be talking about not so much history, but rather about chronology of what happened and what are the beginnings of this particular area. And I'm a strong believer that one has to follow and know something about the history of the professional activities or the scientific activities that one is involved in, so that one has an idea of where it came from and why something is happening the way it's happening. Before the Second World War, there was a very strong documentation movement in Europe. And out of that movement, it developed universal decimal classification, indexing of scientific literature, and it was very, very much oriented towards social goals to integrate technology and techniques to serve certain social goals. In the U.S., the documentation movement was never very strong, but right after the Second World War, the concerns were about information explosions, particularly in science. Information explosion meant it's a very high rate of growth of the availability of scientific records and literature. Vannevar Bush, who was the head of the U.S. scientific effort in the Second World War that produced the Manhattan Project, the atomic bomb, and many other the inventions that helped win the war, wrote an article, As We May Think, that appeared in September issue of Atlantic Monthly in 1945. And that article, he was not the first one who talked about the problems of information explosion, but he was very much the most prominent one, and he did two things. As an engineer and scientist, they always talk about problems and what kind of a solution. And almost in poetic terms, he talked about the problem of the massive task of making more accessible a bewildering store of knowledge. Solution for him was to use the technology, the new technology that is coming up, to organize it and to associate in providing solution to that issue. He suggested a machine, which he called MEMEX, as an idealized model. MEMEX was never built. It's still too complex of idea to associate ideas and all that kind of stuff. But it becomes a model of what many people in technologies are striving for. Anyhow, as a result, the technological imperative became a norm for solving information explosion problems. It is followed to this day. In other words, the problem is information technology, information explosion. Let us find a solution by technology. And we are doing it ever since 1945, even before. Well, the National Science Foundation, and Bush helped establish it, and it was established by Act of Congress in 1950. And in the original Act, as well as the acts that amendments that came out later, it mandated, the word mandated, it didn't ask we will support. It mandated support for scientific and technical information for effective use. And because of this mandate, from 1950s, when the NSF became, started, to very this day, it supports research and development in this area. The division changed names a number of times, but now it's called Division of Information and Intelligence System, and this is the division that provided support for digital libraries as well. And this support that NSF and other government agencies provided sparked involvement of many fields. Many projects were funded, and many projects are funded to this day. Internet was funded through some of these projects, the beginning of the Internet. Well, other government agencies got involved. For instance, the National Institute of Health supported mechanization of the Index Medicus that became Medline and now Medline Plus. In Europe, in USSR, and later globally, started supporting similar activities. It was interesting that during the Cold War, quite often it was argued in Congress that the support for scientific and technical information should be increased because in Soviet Union they are supporting a large centralized system called VINITI, All Soviet Union for Scientific and Technical Information, and there were even suggestions in front of Congress to have a centralized scientific and technical information agency in the United States. Fortunately, this never passed. Well, why was that? Why was it that such massive support? Because information was thought as a strategic resource. You see, science and technology emerged after the Second World War as a major component of national well-being and national direction. As it became a strategic aspect to support that. So whatever supports science and technology, information for instance, became also strategic. This idea that information is a strategic resource is spread to other fields. As a matter of fact, it's a bedrock of information industry. And searching fits right there. Searching helps this strategic resource, information, being utilized effectively. So it affected the importance and increase of online searching as a professional activity. And in effect, the spread of searching to quite a wide populace. And here are some what happened with the idea of information as a strategic resource. It did affect in substantive ways of the evolution of information age, mainly first national and now global shift and focus away from the production of physical goods, as exemplified in the industrial age, towards the manipulation of information. That's what we are talking about, the information age. And information society. Effect the evolution of information society, where the creation, distribution, diffusion, use of information is significant economic, political, and cultural activity. So everything that has to do with information is becoming very, very significant in our society. Let us now move closer to home from the big picture of information society to information retrieval and information science. A guy named Calvin Moores, mathematician and a computing pioneer who was also a member of the then American Documentation Institute, now American Society for Information Science, he coined the term information retrieval in 1951, and the coin stuck, the term stuck, and it's now in every dictionary. So he wanted the label for that burgeoning activity of trying to use machines for manipulating and retrieving information, and information retrieval became the name for that. And by mid-50s, the computerized information retrieval system emerged and later proliferated fast in many fields, even outside of science and globally. Turns out that I was lucky when I was growing up professionally to begin my work after I got my master's degrees in library science, to become the work at a place called Center for Documentation and Communication Research in at Western Reserve University, now Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio. And I was searching a computer. The name of the computer was GE225, and it was General Electric was then making computers. And at that time, we had to write the programs to do the searching. And that whole computer had probably as much memory as my watch has today, not even talk about an iPod. But it started proliferating with machines that are as primitive as Stone Age tools, but it affected very much the development of that field. So the societies dealing with information retrieval, professional societies, the conferences dealing with it proliferated and so on. There was a very, very influential conference that appeared in, that was held in Washington in 1958 that kind of defined this whole activity, and it's the International Conference of Scientific Information. And it has probably the best proceedings ever produced for a conference that I have shown. It's a marvelous historical document. From 1960s onwards, there was also very, very strong growth in information retrieval research. A fellow named Gerald Salton, German and Swiss, that came in the United States and then worked first in Harvard and then at Cornell. Died in 1995, and his students in computer science pioneered research in advanced information retrieval method. Jerry was not the only researcher in this, but it probably was the most prominent. What they did is address the technical or system side of information retrieval, the algorithms, and there were great many good results over the decades, but it was a interesting thing happened is that although they were finding these algorithms that are much more effective and efficient than whatever was done before, it took decades before they were applied commercially. But all the stuff that Jerry and his group and his students and their students produced studying in the late 60s all the way up to the 2000s are today incorporated, and all vendors and all search engines use it. Google is using that which was developed in information retrieval research decades before. So information retrieval research continues to this day internationally, and particularly it's under Text Retrieval Conference, which is a laboratory, and despite its name, it's not a conference at all. It's a laboratory where information retrieval researchers gather once a year to compare advances in the algorithm. And it's regularly reported at the Special Interest Group on Information Retrieval, which is of the Association of Computing Machinery, which is a global conference now held all over the world. Research and information retrieval are still closely connected. Sources of advances, but now it's also proprietary. For instance, Google does a lot of information retrieval research, but the results are not anymore published in any journals. They are held like the pharmaceutical industry. It's holding it for its own ends. I'm bringing this up now so that you'll be fully aware that the next generation of systems that you will be searching will be coming for that kind of a system, for that kind of a research. Well, in the 70s and 80s, and particularly flourishing now, it also saw emergence of research that dealt with the user side of information retrieval. Remember Jerry Salton and computer science was interested very much in the technical side of information retrieval, the algorithms by which text could be manipulated and retrieved. And the human side dealt with how do people behave, and in many schools of library information science, this became a major part of the school. including Rutgers cells. So we addressed the users and use side of information and information retrieval systems. And we did quite a bit of research, such as on the basis, on the basic notion of relevance, where I participated quite a bit over the years. Well, starting in the 90s and till presently, very large growing research areas in interaction, information retrieval, or human-computer interaction. So we have human information behavior, and we have basic courses on that in the school. Information seeking and searching, and our own Carol Kuchta, who is now retired, contributed mightily to that particular area. Unfortunately, the human side, the one that I'm talking now, and the computer side, the one that I talked about in the previous lectures, they do not mesh well. They never did, and unfortunately still do not. Well, let us go on to the real world. I was mentioning the research for two reasons. First, so that you are aware of it, where it came from. But the second is maybe even more important, is that you should be aware of what is going on, because this is what is going to be happening, and maybe when you will be making decisions on what to incorporate, that you have some basis for intelligent decisions to see what was happening and what was found. Okay, on to the real world. Starting with the late 1960s, saw computer applications in information retrieval blossoming. Approximately in the middle of the 1960s, the machine-readable record emerged, and there is a famous report that you can get to Rutgers University Libraries and then to Eric to get it. In late 1960s, I already mentioned Medline and occurred, which was the online version of medical literature. And interestingly enough, this was online way before the internet and the web. And there were commercial time-sharing networks at the time. They were called TimeNet and Telenet. They don't exist anymore because internet killed all those networks, which were commercial, and you had to pay for it to get it by the minute and the second even, and use it by the minute and the second. But by the end of 60s and beginning of 70s, professional searching, online searching, became firmly established. And it grew at a very high rate. Most access, I would say almost all access, for users was through mediated searching. And the end users searching started growing slow. It didn't blossom till the appearance of the web. Dialogue occurred in, went operational and public in 1972, at the same time Orbit, which was developed by a non-profit organization called SDC, Systems Development Corporations, and they were the first large commercial online vendors. Dialog, and we'll be talking about it a little bit, change, was sold a number of times. It is still in business. Orbit later merged with other vendors and kind of disappeared. They provided online access to an ever-growing number of databases. They became information supermarkets. Dialog, for instance, has today over 900 databases. But then there were a number of vendors that were more specialized. For instance, LexisNexis started to with a specialized toward law and then business. SDN, that came out of Chemical Abstracts, was Scientific and Technical Network. EBSCOhost, the publisher of journals, included journals. CSA used to be called Cambridge Scientific Abstracts. So a number of them developed, and a number of them kind of specialized in niches. And there was a giant that emerged in about 2002. And I already mentioned that one, and the link here to Scopus is to an overview we will be using for the first time at our school, or at any, as a matter of fact, school in the principal searching scopus as well. We got free access to that. So it also appeared magazines that are addressing this issue of online searching, such as Information Today, and I already mentioned Searcher, and we'll be reading articles from these. And they comment dutifully on what is going on, and they're in a way becoming a Bible for all the professional searches that they have to follow. The net first went live in 1969 as ARPANET. That was an inter-university net, government-sponsored. The protocol that was developed, that the internet is based in 1983, and was offered free. The other protocols, the TimeNet, TeleNet, these were not free. These were proprietary protocols. And this was offered free, and because it was offered free, became in wide use and still used globally today. That's the present internet was born on the basis of that protocol. In 1986, NSF established a net, and that broadened the reach significantly. 10 years later, or 9 years later, NSF pulled out and it offered to broad public and commercial use. So internet infrastructure is now provided commercially. Up to 1995, only academic institutions that were connected with NSF, research, academic, and similar institutions actually had internet access. By 1980s, internet became, end of 1980s, became a force. By 1990s, it took the world. Internet has a very colorful history, particularly as to people who participated in its development. And when you have time, click on these links. And from the Internet Society, that shows you history and the timeline, how rapidly it grew. Well, and then came the thing that really revolutionized the whole thing, is the World Wide Web. Internet is not the same thing as the World Wide Web, or vice versa, although the World Wide Web is riding on the Internet. They're quite different things. There was a guy at CERN, the Physics Institute in France, on the border of France and Geneva, Tim Berners-Lee, who is now Sir Tim Berners-Lee. He invented the World Wide Web, hypermedia, that they also provided free for global sharing. And it took the world by storm. The first web browser was developed by a guy named Anderson Mosaic, who became the Netscape, and the browser popularized the web. Of course, later on, Microsoft went with their web browser, and that kind of killed everybody else. Interestingly enough, the World Wide Web became by far the fastest growing and spreading technology in history. And that affected very, very much how searching is done. Search engines, the Yahoo, which was really not a search engine at the beginning, it was a directory, was launched in 1993, and Google was launched in 1999, so Google is about 10 years old. And these affected searching enormously. Well, today we have over 3,000 search engines in over 150 countries. We usually think search engine Google. No, there are tons of them. And a few very large ones dominates every market. For instance, in China, a huge search engine and a huge market is dominated by Baidu. Why do I bring the digital libraries when we talk about searching? Well, it turns out that the digital libraries became or are a significant or one of the most significant entries into searching today for the searchers. They emerged in about 1990s, so they're not that old either. They're barely teens now. And since then they evolved, there was massive research. Since then they evolved Well, no, since then they involved mass research and development program. For instance, in the United States, we have the National Science Digital Library, and it's interesting that there are about, 700 projects on that, and the National Science Foundation spent in the last 6-7 years something like $170 million on the development of National Science Digital Libraries. And it turns out that they became a fantastic source for searching for data in every particular subject, you know, from atmospheric research to astronomy to mathematics to education to whatever. Digital libraries also involve massive investment by libraries and completely changed the library landscape, particularly as to access and searching. I already mentioned that nobody goes to the library and everybody is in the library virtually. This is what happened at Rutgers. The budget of the digital portion skyrocketed at Rutgers, and in most, you know, about 6-7 years ago, the digital part was something like 5-7%. Now, the pie is not larger, but the digital part is over 50-60% of the budget. Something had to give. And what they didn't give is the digital aspect of it. So, interestingly enough, you know, I talked about information retrieval, which you kind of developed separately, and now I talk in digital libraries, and it turns out that because digital libraries started incorporating all these databases, and they have to be searched, it brought digital libraries and information retrieval together. Today, digital libraries have a vast international presence, and they're not only in libraries. You know, the digital libraries are highly diversified, and the source of information is as diversified as well. There are many museums, there are societies, all kinds of historical societies, there are professional organizations. American Psychological Institute has a huge digital libraries, and the ACM Association for Computing Machinery has a digital library, which is a major source of information, not only for computers, but computing people, but also for us. So, why I'm bringing it up? Because digital libraries became major resources for searches. There's all kinds of text, images, and so on that are digitized all over the world, and these libraries becoming a rich source of many unusual resources not found to the databases or the web. All what you have to do is, for instance, go to the American Memory Project of the Library of Congress, and all these, which is now in American Memory, were hidden in the belly, deep in the bowels of Library of Congress. Now it became available worldwide and extremely popular and searchable. At the same time, you know, all the good things don't come with the blessings. It also became a major headache for searching. The search mechanisms for digital libraries are not yet well developed and integrated. Something called federated searching, when you search a number of databases at the same time, is still in its infancy. Well, I already mentioned that Rutgers has close to 300 databases. This is how you get to them. You go research resources and indexes and so on. And almost all have to be searched individually. So if you have a question that spans a number of them, you have to search a number of them. At Rutgers, there is a feature called Searchlight, and you can do federated searching, but you can do federated searching on 8 databases only. So it becomes a major resource and a major headache. Okay, let us go to the conclusion. There is an end to this lecture. And a few parting thoughts. Well, there's a new world for searching. Everybody is a searching. Searcher. It's a mass sport. Whoever has a computer or any other communication device also searches. Remarkably few do it well. And even fewer of these searchers can assess how well they are doing. And horror stories abound. There are a great number of studies that have been done on how well people do the searching, and every one of them comes up with grossly deficient searching. And some of the horror stories are tragic. Some of them are funny, but some of them are tragic. There was a few years ago a story that came out of Johns Hopkins University, where some doctors had a patient, and they went to do a literature search on their own to find a solution to the patient. They found some articles. They treated the patient. The patient died. Later on, they investigated what they found, and the librarian came to them and said, if you did a little bit better searching, here was right in front of your nose a good article which would have saved the patient. So mass searching could also be a very dangerous kind of searching. The search engines in this new world of searching are constantly enlarging and refining their search, their reach, their coverage, their specialization. Google Scholar emerged a few years ago, and I'm not a great fan of that, but we'll talk about it later on. But what is happening in this new world of searching is where you search is a major flaw. Web is value neutral. Diamonds and rubbish, the same, true and untrue, the same, good and evil, all are equal. So in that new world of searching, there is an opening for you and for libraries and for information centers. There are new opportunities and challenges, and these opportunities are in the type of services that have emerged recently and are growing, and that I already mentioned. The opportunities are also to provide value-added services, and they can provide value-added services even more. By value-added is that they can do searching appropriately, find resources that otherwise would not be found, and many others. They are connecting in very different ways with users. And their basic was is double. One is that they provide trust. People are trusting them. And that is where ethics play a major role. And we'll be talking about the ethics later on. And that is where they also provide the users, the searchers, you, professional competence, where your lifelong education will play a major role. So this course is really only a beginning. Well, this concludes our opening lecture and showing you what is opening for you. And let's look at a few pictures to show that searching is indeed very human. Have a good time, and I hope that you will enjoy the course as well. Bye.